that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we hear from conceptual artist Danica Phelps, who visited Chico for a couple of reasons: to install her exhibit currently at the University Art Gallery, and to make new works, such as her Maps of Chico, which she created during long walks with her 7-year-old son. The main rule she set for herself was they could never consult actual printed maps. She could only draw on the spot what she saw while they were walking.
That's one of the hallmarks I feel for being a conceptual artist, which is I do my thinking ahead of time. So it might be while I'm taking a shower or going for a walk, and I think up projects. The rules are really predetermined, and then I have to just follow the rules.
Artist Danica Phelps, coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Mall with the North State Arts Calendar.
At Reading's Riverfront Playhouse, A Dickens Christmas Carol, a traveling travesty in two tumultuous acts. The Stikes Upon Thump Repertory Theater Company is embarking on their 15th annual farewell tour of the Dickens tale. Mayhem ensues as this professional troupe scrambles to keep the show going, as everything that could possibly go wrong does. Catch this capricious comedy tonight or tomorrow at 7:30 or Sunday at 2 o'clock. Bring the whole family to the Reading Civic Auditorium tomorrow night for the Moscow Ballet's Great Russian Nutcracker. Experience world-class dancers, playful puppets with handcrafted sets and costumes, all to the famous music by Tchaikovsky. This ballet plays one performance only tomorrow evening, starting at 7 o'clock. Reading's Cascade Theater has an all-new holiday story with its production Cascade Christmas. Don't miss this high-spirited Yuletide spectacular featuring music, dance, and illusion. There's one show tonight, starting at 7, two shows tomorrow at 2 and 7, and then a final show Sunday at 2. On the walls of the Orland Art Center, Fields, Farms, and Fantasies, featuring works by painter Dolores Mitchell, ceramist Margaret Allen, and art photographer Ann Mitchell. One more day to catch this exhibit tomorrow between 1 and 6. Tomorrow night, Chico Theater Company opens its production of the Rodgers and Hammerstein classic, The King and I. Shall we dance? Over to the Chico Theater Company tomorrow at 7:30. Monday night at Sierra Nevada's Big Room, Roots legends Nell Robinson and Jim Nunley. Opening the show will be Chico's own Ma Muse. Making this concert extra special, the musicians, and maybe you, will be taped for a national PBS special. It all starts Monday at 7:30. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. According to playwright Eugene Ionesco, a work of art is above all an adventure of the mind.
Let's join Weekend Showcase's visual art expert on the Chico State campus, where she'll be talking with a conceptual artist who's showing some of her works there.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with artist Danica Phelps, who is visiting Chico from West Massachusetts and has an exhibition called Chico Incomes Outcomes at Trinity Hall, the University Art Gallery, through December 11th. Danica Phelps is a graduate of the Rhode Island School of Design and has been practicing as a conceptual artist for 20 years. Danica, tell us what viewers should expect when they walk into Trinity Hall.
The first thing in the exhibition is a very long drawing that's 23 feet long, and it's a drawing about work and family, and it shows my work that I was making in 2006. That was a very, very large panel of stripes, gray stripes, and each stripe represented a dollar that I owed the bank in my mortgage. There was a point when I had to hire up to 15 people to help me with these stripes. So the drawing shows all those different people working on the stripes. And then it was actually all in my house, which was not really big enough for all those people at all. So it shows my home life as well. And that drawing, the first drawing that you see, is kind of an anomaly within the 20-year trajectory of my work. My work usually uses the lens of money to determine what aspects of my life I draw. For example, another work that's in the exhibition in the beautiful alcoves in the gallery is the piece that's called Incomes Outcome. And it's a very long project that I've been working on for 4 years now. And in it, anytime I sell any drawings within that particular project, I draw everything that I spend that particular income on. Then when I run out of that money, I stop drawing and wait until there's more income from that project.
Would visitors to the exhibit understand what you're doing?
One of the wonderful things about this gallery is that there's always an attendant who is there, and I have met with a few of the attendants, and I've given an artist talk. Therefore, the attendants are very well informed and very friendly and would always talk with anyone who had any questions. But I would say, and this is always true in my work, that there's a lot of formal aspects one can find interesting without having to know the whole background story. So you can just look at the drawings if you wanted to as you're walking through. It's a transit space. A lot of times people are walking from one place to another. And I've noticed while I've been either talking with someone in the gallery or installing the work that people stop and look. It's really nice to see that. And I think people are more engaged here than I've seen in other places. I am making work here that is just hung in another wall, and that work is three maps that my son and I are making as we're walking around Chico, and I haven't looked at any maps of Chico. We do not look at maps while we're walking and drawing the map. First day, we headed out north along the river and then kind of worked our way back along the streets. Today, we walked south and then walked back, and it's very interesting, I think, to look at the maps, because someone who knows Chico very well would probably chuckle at a lot of the mistakes that we've made and misunderstandings. For example, the map today, there's kind of a part where the whole thing got twisted at least 90 degrees, if not 120 degrees, where when we got out of the series of streets, I had to kind of draw some arrows showing that the map should be twisted.
Well, I'm looking at what Orion is drawing right now. We're sitting at a table, and he has some tiny little colored pencils. He has been helping you do the drawings?
Well, not drawing on the maps, although he did add a train on the train tracks, and that's the first time he's ever drawn on one of my drawings. Usually he's the subject of many of my drawings. But every time we have an intersection, we take the map out, we look at it, and discuss where we have been, what streets we've seen before, and which way we should go. So it's more of a discussion than an actual hands-on drawing for him.
Orion is on the cusp of 7 years old, and he's going to talk a bit about what it's like to go around the neighborhoods with his mom and about the train that he drew.
I just drew the train for fun, but going around the neighborhood, got lost a bit, and some of the maps are wrong because they got twisted, or we made the streets go a little too far. So like on the first one, when we got back, It didn't really, it was supposed to match up with the streets because that's what we walked on. We walked on First Street, but then when we got back, it didn't really turn out well because First Street went up like farther than where we walked, so it showed that it was wrong, but it was kind of interesting.
Well, it's nice to have something that's wrong yet interesting. Thank you very much. Danica, so you'll be showing the maps at the Trinity Hall exhibit.
Yes, in fact, we start the walk every morning at the gallery. We walk about 7 hours and we end the walk at the gallery. So the point at which you're seeing, where you're standing looking at the maps, is the origination of the walk.
And you had not been in Chico before, had you?
No.
As you walk through Chico, what kinds of impressions did the city leave on you?
The first day we walked through Bidwell Park, and that is an amazing place and an amazing resource for people in the city. And it was really shady. We really enjoyed that. And then we got out into the streets, and I should probably look at the map and that would remind me. I'll tell you that today the goal was to walk south along the river and then come back to the east of the city, through the east of the city. There were a few things that were really remarkable. One is we were walking past trees that were full of persimmons and pomegranates and walnuts and almonds. These are things we've never seen growing on trees. They usually come from very far away where we live. So that was really exciting for both of us. And the roads really seem to head in one direction. And there aren't a lot of roads that go off of those roads. And once you've committed to walking in a certain direction, you don't really have a lot of options, you know, to go left or right or east or west. I should say that I lived in New York City for 13 years, and I did a walking project in New York City where I ended up walking through every neighborhood. And at any point that you're standing in New York City, you have a fairly infinite number of possibilities of where to walk. The downtown of Chico is like that, but the extremities of Chico are very, because it's so much farmland, which is amazing to see all that food being grown, it's very limited in the directions that you can walk.
You were telling me, Danica, that students had some amazing questions when you gave your artist talk. So what did you share with students?
I just remember that when I was in graduate school, I'm sure that to the professors, my professors, it seemed as if I was not listening or responding at all to any of the feedback that I was getting. And I was just developing my work in a certain trajectory. And it was developing, but it really wasn't acknowledging any of the feedback that I was getting. And then the minute that I left graduate school, my work changed 180 degrees. And it was as if everything that everyone had been saying to me kind of synthesized into a jewel that I have been working on, unpacking all that feedback now for 20 years. So I was suggesting to students that, you know, they might feel like, oh, I don't know how to incorporate the feedback that I'm getting. So I would say to them, it may happen later. You know, that just absorb everything that everyone's telling you and trust that somehow it'll filter through you and come out in your work. And then I was also saying to faculty members that, you know, if you see your students disregard everything you're saying, know that at some point it may all come out. You know, it will happen eventually.
Danica, can you share with listeners your sense of conceptual art?
Yes, to me, conceptual art from the 60s really highlights the ideas behind the work and tries to pare down any formal aspects so that it's as simple and concise as possible. To be perfectly honest, I find a lot of that work somewhat boring formally, and it is meant to be cerebral. And because of the work of those artists, we can now, as conceptual artists, bring formalism back into the work. For example, one of my favorite artists, and I'm absolutely indebted to him, is Ankuwara. His work, for a while, consisted of a black panel with the date that he made the piece stamped, not even handwritten, in white on that panel. That is so pared down. He's trying to say something very, very specific and not let formal aspects get in the way and distract the viewer from the ideas. So now, because we have that foundation, conceptual artists can then bring in formal aspects again. For example, in the works Incomes Outcome, in the alcoves, there are red stripes underneath each drawing. The drawing is of what I spent money on that day. For example, if I spent $3 on a subway ride, there are three red stripes under that drawing. Someone asked me during the artist talk, why are there different shades of red? What does that mean? And I said, well, it's really just a formal decision. I think it's more interesting to have different shades of red. Conceptual artists these days have the leisure almost of diving back into conceptual aspects because of the work that the artist did in the 60s.
Danica, the word value has a lot of very deep meaning for you.
Yes, I started making this work when I was a waitress right after graduate school, and it always confused me that I might work 8 hours and earn $100, or I might work 8 hours and earn $20. And then in terms of spending money, if I only had $20 left, a bowl of soup for $4 seemed like an awful lot of money. And if I had just made $100, a bowl of soup seemed, you know, easy, not much money at all. In applying that to my work, the first time I took my work to a gallery, the gallerist put my work in three piles. He said, okay, these are the big ones. They're going to be $800. These medium-sized ones are going to be $400, and the little ones are going to be $200. But I thought in my mind, that little one, that particular little one, is my favorite one, and I think it's the best drawing. And it seemed confusing to me to just price them according to size. But that is often the way that artists' work is priced, because it's assumed the artist has put forth their very best work and all of their work is equally good, and therefore a bigger one would cost more.
Did you ever convince the gallery person that the small drawings were really very valuable?
Yes, I did. And I have to really hand it to all the galleries that I've worked with. The first commercial gallery that I showed my work in was called Jack Tilton Gallery, and it's a gallery that had resale of Mirandis for $900,000, who knows, probably more than that. And he agreed to bill, to invoice people for $7. That was the least expensive drawing. And I'm sure he was paying the people more because the gallery only gets half. So he got $3.50 to pay someone else to send the invoice out. So that means that anyone who shows my work has to be really committed to this concept. At that time, the work ranged between $7 and maybe $800. At this point, it ranges between maybe $200 and let's say $4,500, really just depending on how much I like the drawings. What that means is that, first of all, many, many, many people, and I mean thousands of people, can buy my work. And it can be people who don't have that much money. Instead of an artist who makes 8 huge paintings a year, and you know, there's only 8 people who can buy those paintings. And every gallery since then who's agreed to show my work is really committing to the concept of the work much more than they are to making money, because they may sell only $200 drawings, and that's not going to pay their rent very easily. The last gesture that I make in my drawing is to write the price right on the drawing, which is very unusual, especially in the galleries that I show my work in. So that becomes part of the drawing. That is an actual mark right on the drawing. Most artists, I think, throw away the work that they don't like, that they don't feel represents them well. However, I have committed to showing all of my drawings. It's part of the rules that I've set out for myself that I draw everything I spend money on, and that means I've got to show every single drawing. So instead of throwing the drawing away, I mark right on it that I think it's worth $200 instead of the next drawing that I think is worth $2,000. But the fact is that really it's all the concept that is the work. Oh, another aspect of the work that I should mention is that when someone buys a drawing, because again, because they're all part of a system where I've committed to showing all the drawings, if I ever want to show the work again, I would need to kind of replace the drawings that were sold. So what I do is I trace the drawings with silk tissue and then mount them to wood and then add information at the bottom about who bought the original drawing and when and where and for how much money. And then there are green stripes at the bottom there are some that have been 20th generation. That means 20 different people have bought the same drawing. And usually it's a drawing that I don't like very much. So it would be, let's say, a $30 drawing. And then it gets bigger and bigger and more interesting because more and more people have purchased it. And in reality, those that are up to 20th generation, even though they're my least favorite drawings, they exemplify the whole concept of the work. So they actually become the best drawings. But I've committed to keeping the price the same, no matter how many generations there are.
Well, you were saying some very interesting things about making rules for yourself, and the rules give a form to your art.
That's one of the hallmarks I feel for being a conceptual artist, which is that I do my thinking ahead of time. So it might be while I'm taking a shower or going for a walk, and I think up projects. The rules are really predetermined, and then I have to just follow the rules. During our walk today, Orion kept saying, but you can't look at the map. That's one of the rules. You can't look at your phone. You can't look at the map on the phone. He knows the rules of this project. The rules also allow me to use my personal data. So let's say my money coming in and out. They allow me to have some room for being surprised by what the work might look like. So let's say I want to make a year-long panel where it shows every single dollar coming in and out of my bank account for a whole year. I've created the rules, and then I implement the rules, and then I'm surprised by what it looks like in the end, which is really fun. I really enjoy that aspect of my work. Another thing that we talked about in the artist talk is the viewer interaction with the work. For example, that 23-foot long drawing that you first see when you come into the gallery, there's another drawing that I made that was 60 feet long. And when I hung it in the gallery, I drew a line under the drawing, a pencil line, and people could mark the spot where they wanted me to cut the drawing after the exhibition and then write their name on the line. And it's a continuous drawing. It morphs from one inch to the next. So at the end of the exhibition, I cut the drawing right where people told me to, and they determined the composition of the drawing based on where they wanted me to cut it. I really enjoy that kind of interaction with the viewer. Similarly, with Income's Outcome, I would basically not make any drawings at all for that series if no one bought the drawings. But instead, the composition of the entire series is determined by who buys which drawings. And if five people all buy the same drawing, that drawing is going to get longer and longer, and that changes the overall composition of the piece the next time I show it.
In a sense, you're doing self-portraits.
Yes, I am. And you know, a funny thing about that is that I'm getting to, especially when I come for an exhibition, when it's an event, when I'm giving artist talks, it can start to feel like it's all about me. And I feel like I'm really self-absorbed sometimes. But I think the more personal you get in your work, the more other people can actually relate to it and relate it to their own experience. For example, if I make a drawing of a campground that I stayed in because I was walking all day and my ankle just hurts so much, and I'd make a drawing trying to really express how much my ankle hurts, then someone else might be able to really feel that and think, oh, that reminds me so much of the time that I had a shin splint when I was playing field hockey in high school. My sense is that, and I use this in my own work, that the more personal you are, the more other people will think about their own experiences and relate it to their own experiences. And just the concept of marking one's life is something that I think many people can relate to. And money. Also, people relate to that, I think.
I've been speaking to Danica Phelps, who has an absolutely fascinating exhibition, Chico's Income's Outcome, at the University Art Gallery. That's in Trinity Hall, right next to the administration building. It runs through December 11th. The hours are Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Pink Martini, the one-of-a-kind group from Portland, is always a big hit with Chico audiences. And the group will be returning to Chico State's Laxon Auditorium a week from Thursday. That's December 10th. This collection of top musicians, fronted by a sultry chanteuse, calls its act Global Cabaret, providing sophisticated, high-grade fun with musical influences from around the world. Now, maybe you are out shopping today on this Black Friday. Well, here's Pink Martini with a sexy shopping list for Santa.
Santa baby, slip a sable under the tree for me. I've been an awful good girl, Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, an out of space convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be oh so good if you'd check off my Christmas list. Oopity-boo, Santa honey, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. I've been an angel all year, Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in your community. Go out and see a play. Go hear some live music. Go to an art gallery or two. Support the arts and the artists where you live. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio. And I'm Tom Kinney. Shedri, 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 poshka, prileti la, lasti poshka.